Mini-episode 749 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 749. This is actually an edition of the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We are here for our fantasy football preview segment, our roundtable for 2016. We have greatly enjoyed putting these previews on the last couple of years. We have a gentleman who has been on the show to talk a lot of fantasy football with us in the past, and we have a gentleman that we're having on for the first time today. Both of them very distinguished individuals. First, the gentleman that we've not had on previously. He is Bobby McMahon from Roto Experts. It was great to hear that we are going to be getting him booked on the program. That was called to my attention a couple of days ago. I've been looking forward to having him on and talking to him. So, Bobby, for the first time, welcome to our program. Sir, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to it.
Pleasure to have you. And the other gentleman that we're having on the show today, of course, no stranger to the FDH Lounge, and specifically also the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider segments. I want to call attention, by the way, this is FDH mini episode number 749. For 751, we are doing a best of from our guests from the last 100 mini episodes. That has been sort of a tradition on the show every 100 or so. I want to flag everybody to a snippet from a great conversation that we were having in the spring about the unfortunate passing of Prince, and he had some thoughts that were very enlightening, and that is the clip that we used from his appearance on the show, so I want to call attention to that. I speak, of course, of the great Michael Harmon from Fox Sports Radio. You can catch him weeknights on Fox Sports Radio with Jason Smith, Sundays with Dan Beyer. Always a pleasure to have him on the program, whether we're talking fantasy football or anything else. Michael, welcome back to the show. How are you today, sir?
Dominating, ready for the one-week countdown to actual football, all eyes on San Diego, of course, tonight with Colin Kaepernick and what all goes on there. But, you know, I've got a lot of thoughts, and I do create a lot of controversy and anger and vitriol at 140 characters a pop.
Well, along those lines, I hope I won't qualify for any of that vitriol by saying that we hope to dominate the ear holes here. I saw an exchange that you and
Jason
Smith had about other people stealing your material. I hope that I won't be counted among them. That's a tribute rather than a stealing, isn't it?
No, not when I'm not getting a writer credit or part of the paycheck of what they're getting. It's become a fairly regular routine of us checking our mentions, checking our conversations on Twitter, or getting emails from people going, hey, we kind of heard this conversation last night on your show. It's like, yeah, that's the way the world works in media. And Bobby, welcome to the fray. I hope you're ready for, taking a deep breath and ready for another big run, because we're all going to be sleep deprived. We should post photos from week one to week 17.
Absolutely. And again, I'll start this off with you, Bobby. I want to get some thoughts from both of you guys. Just an overview sort of on any dominant points here from the preseason. When I look at it, the big stories coming out of it to me seem to be the quarterback situations in Denver and Dallas. Maybe a little bit more upside in Denver than we might have thought, if only because it's the unknown there. And I think everybody kind of figured Mark Sanchez had a lower ceiling. You kind of don't know what to expect now. Dallas, unfortunately, we saw from last year, maybe a kind of limited ceiling without Tony Romo, albeit with a very hyped rookie coming in who had a great preseason. That was kind of my sense of what were some of the bigger stories. Again, I'll start with you, Bobby. Well, what did you think were some of the breakout stories of this preseason?
Yeah, I definitely think the injuries moved into the spotlight. We had, obviously, Romo that you mentioned. We had just had Bridgewater with the devastating injury. Then he's out for the year. So I think the quarterback carousel is already spinning, and we're not even at week one yet. It's going to be real curious to see how Dak Prescott does. It's obviously a great offensive line there. He was a very talented quarterback in college and getting pressed into duty right away. But he certainly got some pieces around him to make some things happen. So yeah, that the Denver battle was very interesting. I think Simeon's just basically a placeholder until they feel like Paxton Lynch is ready. But Mark Sanchez is not having such a great summer. So that's unfortunate for him. But yeah, I mean, the carousel is still spinning with even more injuries, with Jamal Charles possibly not ready to play in week one, or possibly only going to play a little bit, has people freaking out, especially the people that were spending like a second round pick on him. So I think all the injuries in the preseason have kind of overshadowed any other hype train that was moving.
That's a great point, and unfortunately that's been the case a lot of these past couple of preseasons, because we always tend to get some high-profile guys going down, and it tends to be a bloodbath some weeks, and we have seen that, unfortunately, all too often. Michael, what are you thinking looking at it? I heard the name Teddy Bridgewater mentioned there. I didn't mean to give short shrift to him, but I don't know that it necessarily affects the Minnesota passing offense as much, losing him. No disrespect to any of the guys there, but I'm not sure I see any WR1 or WR2 candidates on that roster at the moment. But what did you think were some of the more noteworthy items of the preseason?
Yeah, the Bridgewater comes down because I was curious, and certainly from a straight NFL perspective, a lot of expectations for them to better their run of a year ago, which ended with a field goal miss in a likely spot. But you look at Bridgewater, year three, the emergence of Diggs along with Johnson, McKinnon out of the backfield, Rudolph telling you he's the best tight end in football, all those fun little stories with Adrian Peterson still running the ball, that perhaps there was going to be a little bit of upside for Bridgewater this year, not necessarily to become a viable fantasy starter, but one of those plug-and-play kind of guys to where at least you give him a little bit of notice. And now, while all those pass receivers go back down and you start questioning, you know, at this part of his career, can Adrian Peterson still be that guy that has the focus and eight men in a box and still perform at a great level? At what point do you hit the wall in that regard? But by the same token, he's what, one of a handful of backs that you can still trust that until he breaks down will touch the ball 18 to 22 times a game, if not more. So you have that. Trevor Siemian, being a Northwestern graduate, this is one of the most exciting developments in football history. Fantasy-wise, I don't know what it does on the whole. We see a little more from Demaryius Thomas. You're hopeful that anything that was causing him, other than Peyton Manning's noodle arm, to be distracted last year, remember everything going on with his mom and his grandma, and he left a bunch of balls on the carpet, still ended up with a decent final total. But if you watched all those Denver games, and certainly they were on national television, you saw a number of times where he betrayed not only Peyton Manning's stats, but yours. So you're hopeful that that's behind him, and that with Siemian, you know, the one thing that we learned at Northwestern and that they're preaching there in Denver is that he has the memory of a cornerback and he keeps coming after it. Something Mark Sanchez, nobody could ever say that about Mark Sanchez. So you have that value for it. The other one is to just elaborate on the Charles injury a little bit, because Kansas City, a team that many like, you know, on the whole potential playoff side of things to be contenders in the West, but you're looking at between West and Ware, where to pick your poison. You know, I think when I look at Spencer Ware, there's a lot I like because he is a bit of a throwback to the, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of world. But in the interim, when fantasy owners are now scrambling, assuming that they can go to the wire and make a claim on either of them, it's a very tough proposition by which to take your free agent acquisition budget or use your waiver claim status to go try to pick one of those, because you could very well pick wrong.
You very well could. And for the next follow-up, Mike, I want to start with you because of a name that you mentioned there. Certainly, Adrian Peterson, you can make an excellent case for him, unfortunately, being more affected than anybody else by the Bridgewater injury because of, like you said, eight in the box. He's going to be seeing a lot of that until they can prove that that shouldn't be the case, which may never materialize at all during the season. But when you mentioned about him being a three-down back, I'm curious, just in looking at the big picture in the league now and where it's going, because this is the first year I think a lot of us can remember where there's a consensus that it's not only respectable, but maybe even advisable to take a wide receiver high in the first round, if not first overall, Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, et cetera. We're getting that sort of lean towards explosiveness, which I think a lot of us would figure is a good thing rather than checking off a box at the running back position. And yet, when you look at Zeke Elliott coming into the league this year in Dallas, Gurley last year with the Rams, Fournette next year coming into the league, Nick Chubb potentially, are we moving, certainly not this year, but are we somewhat kind of moving back towards the bell cow in this league? I've been kind of monitoring that the last couple of years and personally kind of predicting we would see that at some point just because of the physical nature of some of the guys coming into the league. Do you think that we may be in the midst of a trend here, or is it a little bit early to say, Mike?
I think it's too early to say that we're going to have the trend. Right now we're treating them like Major League Baseball bullpens, the running game, right? We've got our short yardage guy. We've got our pass catcher in Minnesota's case. Expect a lot of McKinnon, the guy that I neglected to mention in it all, but could be a guy that actually catches 60 balls out of the backfield or would have with Teddy Bridgewater. With Sean Hill, I don't know that he's going to remember that he's got a running back that's his safety valve. I think he's too much downfield. And badly downfield, but we'll see what happens there. But we do have guys that do creep in, and we've got a handful that we can call bell cows. You know, with Leonard Fournette, I wouldn't touch a football this year in the NCAA. I'm playing Madden 17, and I'm sitting out. I'll see you on draft day. I'm not giving up my body. Because we talk about Nick Chubb, we don't know what Nick Chubb is coming back off of last year's injury. Certainly Gurley in Los Angeles here, we're going to watch him until his tongue's dragging on the carpet, because the only other guy that can make a play. And I take this venue here to say that Tavon Austin should have running back capability because, well, that's all they got. And I got to figure out a way to get him, make him more fantasy viable. But I'd like to think we're getting towards where we'd go back to the old school type of football. But I don't think that's the case. I think there's just too much of the running game is now short swing passes. So it's more wide receivers and how much space you can create.
Absolutely. Any thoughts that I had along those lines were sort of along the old political slogan of personnel is policy. So not necessarily that coaches are scheming to get back to that point, but just that the type of player that seemed like he was extinct a couple of years ago, or if not extinct, fairly rare, because Adrian Peterson never went away. And a couple of these guys have been there all along, but just in terms of them proliferating a little bit more. I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well. Bobby, on whether we're going to continue to see more of what we've seen this year of where the push is to get wide receivers early in the first round, or if we might start to get a couple more of these unicorns coming back into the game here who can really be difference makers for you at running back.
Yeah, I actually think we're definitely going to see more and more people go wide receiver early, and that's going to continue to be a trend. And I think there's a couple interesting things that happen with it. It obviously, one, makes those players like Gurley, like an Adrian Peterson, like we're hoping that a Lamar Miller can be this year, those bell cows, more valuable because there's so few of them. There's, we can probably count them 5 to 10 tops that are really getting the lion's share of their team's touches. But then those other teams, it creates a role for smaller guys like a Theo Riddick, like Duke Johnson in Cleveland, who's going to catch, 60, 70 passes this year, and just makes those type of running backs more valuable. So it actually, in effect, is giving more depth to the running back position, which is why it's, I think, okay and definitely advised to go running back early. I would even say the first few rounds you could go back-to-back running backs, or back-to-back wide receivers, and then start picking off some running backs here and there. But, it's a passing league for sure, and that's what we've seen everything gravitate towards, whether it's, tight ends getting more involved in the passing game, and we've definitely seen that over the past, five or so years with just some freak athletes at the position there who are basically just operating as really large wide receivers in some regard. It's definitely exciting from a fantasy perspective because you're putting up tons of points and teams are putting up tons of points. But, I do sort of miss those days of 8 of the first 10 picks or 9 of the first 10 picks in the first round are running backs. And those are all the guys that are touching the ball 20 times a game. And really the only other running backs that are viable are the backup, the handcuffs to those guys. Because they're just dominating the carries. But I just in certain instances that are unique, I think we'll still see it. But I think that's, for the most part, that's gone by the wayside and probably will continue to do so.
Yeah, if I can jump in.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, one of the things on it, as you go through, he mentioned Duke Johnson, who might, if I wore a shirt that said Man Crush, that might be my guy. Of course, that would indicate that RG3 doesn't get broken in half by week three.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you have the pass catchers, and that's one of the things that just needs to be asterisks is, you know, watching the shift into point per reception leagues. Because those guys, as much as we like the shift and the trend, if you're not getting the point, or in a lot of cases the half point, those guys, it's awful tough to get them into a lineup, right? You like to have them. You like that safety that they're not going against you when they rip off an 80-yard yak. But, you know, we're looking at two-thirds to about three-quarters of leagues now drifting into the point per reception, so expanding the player base and making those guys viable. And so that keeps us with a bigger pool, but I want 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And I still will look at running backs far earlier than anybody else, perhaps showing my age.
Well, no, I mean, there's getting to be a little bit of scarcity there, again, as far as these top caliber guys. So I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. I think that the point that you and Bobby are both making is very well taken on that one. And I have to say, like, my ears perked when you mentioned Duke Johnson there, being a lifelong denizen of America's North Coast. By the way, rocking my Cavs championship hat as we're having this conversation. But that had been kind of the buzz a little bit here in the offseason a little bit, was that Hugh Jackson looks at him much the same way he does Gio Bernard as far as his ability to use him. And you start looking a little bit deeper at some of the offensive minds at work here. Pep Hamilton, Al Saunders, also a part of the staff. That's as good of a threesome as offensive minds as you're going to find. So while objectively this Browns team might be historically bad overall, owing in large part to the defense, you start to look at, again, the brain trust that's there offensively and some of the talent that's there. I think a lot of us were figuring that Josh Gordon wasn't going to be any kind of a factor this year. I was a little bit surprised the suspension was only 4 games, but he'll be back in a month. So it's one of these things, Mike, where isn't that a classic example? You have to dig a little bit deeper than just looking at the surface, because, again, on the surface, this team is a dumpster fire, and there's not much to like in terms of the wins and losses for this year, but a classic example where you can probably find a little fantasy gold even amidst the ruins.
Well, that's just it. Fantasy knows no helmet, and fantasy knows no logo. You find stats, even the worst quarterbacks throwing for, you know, 175 to 200 yards. Doesn't mean that the touchdowns are necessarily going with them, but, you know, we look at you bring up Cleveland. It's just a great example of, you know, can you get more than 5 wins if you look at the schedule? Yeah, you're wishing and hoping that RG3 has found some semblance of consistency. And when he goes down, look, if he's going to keep taking hits like he did last week, he may be not long for this season, that Josh McCown comes in and looks more like the Josh McCown you saw in Chicago when he had all those big receivers. But you got to be excited, at least on paper, for what the Cleveland offense could be able to do once you get Josh Gordon back, whether Coleman develops. Terrell Pryor's interesting for fantasy purposes, probably not a guy in most leagues. You're not going deep enough on the bench to where he gets drafted, but certainly a guy that's on your watch list to see how many targets and how he's going to be utilized. And when we talk about Johnson out of the backfield, you know, not even going to Barnage, who was a non-factor for the first, 7 years of his NFL career before suddenly he becomes the breakout star of 2015. I mean, you're looking at a lot of options that are fantasy viable. I mean, I've got Barnage as a top 5 tight end. He may not score a ton of touchdowns, but the opportunities are going to be there, particularly as we're looking at the PPR world. You look at Josh Gordon, he's going to be drafted as probably a fourth receiver with everybody holding their lottery ticket or football card or whatever you want to do, just to, so you have something symbolically you're holding on to when he gets back on the field in week 5 against the Patriots to see if there isn't some magic held therein. So, yeah, you're always going to find some value, even in the bottom feeders. I mean, hell, Jacksonville's been awful for years, but last year, one of the most fun fantasy teams ever. They became Actionville, so it was beautiful.
Yeah, there's always possibilities, even with the bad teams. And Bobby, going back to something that you were saying about this proliferation in the league of tight ends with soft hands becoming a greater part of the offensive vertical game, Gary Barnage is almost sort of the poster child for that, isn't he? Because, again, as Mike just said, guy who came out of nowhere, none of us had crystal balls that were strong enough to see that performance coming last year. It's always interesting when people will just completely defy all of the industry touts and kind of come out of nowhere. But that really is kind of a situation that shows you, doesn't it, Bobby, that, again, there's a lot more tight ends that bear a close eye even than just the ones on the surface.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Barnage is definitely a perfect example of that. I mean, not a lot of guys break out at age 31, 32 in the NFL. And, you know, he had just a monkey's, and he was waiver wire wonder. I would imagine that he certainly helped some teams definitely, if not win championships, certainly make a big playoff push, because he was definitely a shining star in that offense. And I think he's definitely top 10 this year. Once again, I think there's definitely going to be some chances there for him, along with Coleman when Gordon's back, you know, Duke Johnson. I think it is a nice team in Cleveland. That's all predicated, obviously, on RG3's health, first and foremost. But I'm even excited to see what he could do. I'd certainly take a shot at him as my backup quarterback. So, yeah, I think a fun time, at least on offense, fun times are hopefully ahead for Cleveland.
Yeah, he's shown some signs of life this preseason. And, again, it'll be interesting to see if it amounts to anything more than that as we go along, and whether or not the team holds on to Josh McCown, because there's obviously more of a market for his services out there with all the quarterbacks going down in the league. But next question, I want to start on this one with you, Bobby, because I was very intrigued by your one column on breakout players for this year, with you listing Carlos Hyde as number one overall. I, and this is not just me being an Ohio State honk, I certainly agree with that. And what's really kind of interesting is it sort of almost puts me in mind of another column that you did about Gary Sanchez, because Carlos Hyde almost seems like one of these post-hype guys at this point in his career. Gary Sanchez has been the catcher of the future for the Yankees since, like, Thurman Munson. You know, he finally gets called up, gets a chance, gets it done. For Carlos Hyde, we're waiting, the clock is ticking, but I certainly agree with you on that one there, and I'd just like to get your thoughts on some other guys that people should, whether you want to call them breakout players, sleepers, whatever label you want to put on it, guys that people should be thinking about more than they are right now.
Sure. Yeah, I'm definitely excited for Hyde. And, I mean, I think, you know, from his rookie year and basically when he made Frank Gore expendable, he looked really good. And I think it's just been injuries that have held him back. So hopefully he gets right and does break out. Not just because I put him in the article, because I've been drafting him in a ton of leagues. So, another guy that was really high on that list, who I'm also very high on this year, is Jameis Winston. And I think what he did he had, when you look at it, a really good season overall for a rookie quarterback. He's got a lot of talent around him. He's got a strong running game, a really good receiving back in Charles Sims. Who I think is one of the best wide receivers in the league, Mike Evans, who I think is just another guy who's going to explode this year along with Winston. And I just think Jameis Winston, he really started protecting the ball a little bit better in the second half of the year, and was really a very consistent fantasy option. And I still think he's being drafted a little bit too late. And I'm happy to wait on a quarterback and tab him as one of my guys. Another couple guys that I'm looking at is Jeremy Langford. Now the metrics on him were not great last year. The advanced stats on what he was able to do, his effectiveness wasn't super. But really, I mean, he's got Jordan Howard there behind him, the rookie. He's got Kadeem Carey and Jaquizz Rodgers is there as well. But he's going to get, 15 touches a game, possibly more than that if he shows what he can do. He can catch the ball decently well. It's not a super strong suit of his, but I certainly see him being involved in the passing game like he was last year when he was basically splitting carries with Forte while both of them were healthy towards the end of the year. So I like Langford's role, basically. And another guy along those lines is Matt Jones, who, if he can get healthy enough, I like his role, because I don't really think anything else there in Washington right now is going to be able to compete with a healthy Matt Jones. And I actually like that offense. I think Kirk Cousins, physical limitations are certainly there in Kirk Cousins' game. But in today's NFL, he is a pass machine, and he's got some really nice weapons to throw to. So if they can get going in the air, I think Matt Jones has a chance to be a little bit better than he was as a rookie and add to that a huge workload. I think he could be looking at, RB2 status as well. So those are guys that I'm looking at that I think you can get a little bit later than maybe they should be going because of their role. That could be nice values for you if they do indeed break out this year.
Those are some very intriguing names, and the Winston one in particular. That seems like a classic example right there, a guy that you're probably going to draft as a QB2, who, if he has that kind of a breakout, could be a QB1 and either put you in a situation with some nice excess value at quarterback. He can make a trade or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, with the guys that are there with Evans and Safarian Jenkins, if Vincent Jackson can get somewhat back to what he used to do, there's a lot of ifs there. But, yeah, it could be an explosive offense. And, Michael, I know that I could almost audibly hear your ears perk up when Langford was mentioned there with the Bears situation. So I know you must have a list of your own guys here as well. So please put some of them out there as far as guys to keep an eye on for this year.
All right. Do I get to start by just crying into the phone over thinking about what the Bears might actually be this year now? Can I have Adam Gase back at least for a month and make me feel better about myself? Because this is going to be I'm going to be really paying only attention to Northwestern football here, I think, in short order. All right, let's go through some quarterbacks. Let's go through the fun. How about Marcus Mariota? We like explosive smash mouth. We like the idea of Henry, who's also being underdrafted, and DeMarco Murray in the backfield. But you look at Delanie Walker, the Tajay Sharp, one of the darlings of the preseason that everybody's on board with. Rishard Matthews, who might be a 70-catch guy, still being drafted as a fifth wide receiver right now. That's right. Go out and find him. He's out there waiting for you. I'm not saying Mariota's going to throw for 35 touchdowns, but he's going to be one of those guys on a weekly basis, especially as we see more proliferation into these super flex plays and all those kind of things, where you're going to have some value there. To just capitalize on the Winston, all the analysis, he's also a very good goal line back with that big frame getting in. So he's going to take care of the mail. And for his average ADP, an absolute bargain. Afterthought guy no longer has to be myopic and stare down Calvin Johnson. Matthew Stafford being drafted anywhere from the 15th quarterback on average to 20th. Still has Golden Tate, still the best post-up receiver in the game, and Anquan Boldin. I don't care if he's 142. He'll still move the chains. You got the two guys out of the backfield, Nebdoula and Riddick, who Bobby mentioned a little bit earlier. Another guy who's an afterthought, I think, and might play a big role, because Abdullah, I don't think there's any guarantee he's staying healthy for a long haul, and you'll see some shuffling going on there on Eric Ebron, the other option. So Stafford, one of those QB2s that may have some upside for you as you run through. In the wide receiver position, we already doled out a couple of them, but let's keep the fun going. Stay with Marvin Jones there in Detroit, drafted as a fourth wide receiver right now. I have Russell Wilson as my number one quarterback on the board, and that means I'm going to need Tyler Lockett to up his game. So a guy being drafted as a late third wide receiver, I think I'm going to like my returns there. Willie Snead in New Orleans, 69 catches, nearly 1,000 yards last year. Everybody's all excited about Kobe Fleener coming in, and yes, everybody loves Kobe Fleener. Forget the fact that the last 3 years he's been at 50 catches, like 51, 52, 54. If he was that great, he would have broken through. I know last year was a broken year because of the Andrew Luck ineffectiveness and then the injury, but even in the big year that he had 2 years ago, Kobe Fleener should have probably played a little bit bigger role in terms of the reception count. So I'm still expecting Snead to have himself a big score there. And then go deeper down the list, you look at a guy like Marcus Wheaton in Pittsburgh. If Ben Roethlisberger's having the big season that everybody expects, as much as I'd like to say Jesse James is going to be the big breakout at tight end, I can't do that. I just can't. But I had to get Jesse James's name into the mix. Marcus Wheaton is a guy that's going to have himself a big role and have that breakthrough opposite Antonio Brown.
I think I'd rather have the road dog Jesse James, frankly, in my lineup this year, but that's just me.
Nicely done. There we go. Now we're busting out old wrestling references. I love it.
Yeah, I got two words for you. But as far as it goes with Adam Gase there, yeah, I mean, the worst-case scenario for you, I'll go back to a text that I got, Michael, the guy that I host weekly NFL shows with during the season, my guy Kyle Ross, texted me. I was at that awful rainy, cold Michigan State-Ohio State game last year. He texts, I'm down there under the stands trying to keep warm. He texts me and says, there's two things you need right now, a space heater and Tom Herman. So I hope that nobody is texting you with anything like that and putting Adam Gase's name in there, although that may very well be the case.
Soon enough, and all the diatribes against Cutler to begin, I'm sure, too.
Yeah. Well, You mentioned the Seattle passing game. That triggered a thought in my head. I'm going to follow up and start with you on this, Michael. It seems to me people are overly assuming that Doug Baldwin was just a fluke last year. I'm kind of disagreeing with what seems to be the consensus. I'm not saying he's WR1, WR2, whatever, but it seems like people are just completely discounting what he did last year. When I look at the average draft rankings, et cetera, what are your thoughts on this? Are people overly discounting Doug Baldwin's breakthrough last year?
I think he's being lumped in with guys like Ted Ginn Jr. as a, this can't happen again. With Ted Ginn Jr., I can agree. I'm probably not seeing double-digit touchdowns again. With Doug Baldwin, right. I think you saw once they decided to focus on him as the run game, you know, at times they needed to, a supplement, you know, the defense at times not as strong and seemingly out of sorts, that you had a little more pressure on the passing game to work. And when he became the featured guy, he excelled. And so for me, he's still a high-end number two. I don't see how there's going to be that dramatic a drop-off. I think part of it is there's an assumption that Jimmy Graham is somehow going to magically fit into an offense that he hasn't practiced in and doesn't necessarily seem like a fit for. I still see him ranked very highly based on reputation of what we saw many years ago. He's a guy that I'm not banking on him to come in and have some big role in the passing game. And the running game, probably not as stout as it's been in years past, as much as we like the 5.6 yard per carry from Thomas Rawls. We like the fact that they brought Christian Michael back, and he's shined in August like he seems to do each and every year, and they have ProSize, and you get a lot of, you know, excitement there. Reality is the defense might have taken a step back, and now you've got a guy that's become that much more complete a passer in Russell Wilson. I like Doug Baldwin, you know, a little better than most, and even if he doesn't repeat the touchdown total, I think the targets are still going to be there.
Okay, so you're with me on that, maybe even more so than where I'm at on this, as far as, again, not assuming that he's necessarily a megastar based on what we did last year, but not discounting it completely either. Where do you come down on that one, Bobby?
Yeah, I'm kind of more in your guys' camp as well. I'm certainly from a, you know, a long-term standpoint, and just looking at him, he just doesn't have that feel of a number one, and certainly think he's just really in a nice spot for production, but I don't think that spot has changed much at all. Yeah, we're going to see a little bit more Tyler Lockett, and he's an explosive playmaker, very exciting young player. I agree on Jimmy Graham. I'm just not sure how he fits in, and the splits of how that offense picked up. I know it obviously wasn't all after Jimmy. It wasn't all on Jimmy Graham, but that offense was totally different after Jimmy Graham went down and was out for the year, and that's really when Doug Baldwin started to go on an absolute tear. So I'm expecting definitely some regression, because I just don't think he's that talented. But I was certainly taking him all day long as a wide receiver three, you know, or wide receiver two if I'm getting him in say, like the fourth round or something like that, which I have seen him drop in a lot of drafts, and I think it's because people just don't want to touch the guy because they think he's a fluke. And I think it's kind of, there's a happy medium between thinking someone's a fluke and enjoying the consistent production, even if it's 75%, 80% of what he got us last year. I'll still take that all day long.
Absolutely, yeah, as the Wall Street guys might say, you know, don't buy at the top of the market, but don't necessarily treat him like a penny stock either, because that doesn't seem warranted as well. Like you said, try to find a happy medium. Question I'd like to start with you, Bobby, is, in a big picture, looking at the fantasy landscape this year, a guy who is going first round pretty much just about everywhere that I'm seeing, and even I'm hearing even number one overall in a fair number of drafts, and he's certainly talented enough, but David Johnson, we're not really used to seeing this. We're not used to seeing this level of projection out of a player. Again, he probably should have been the lead guy last year. I think a lot of us that were calling him a sleeper in the preseason were really sort of befuddled at Chris Johnson getting the nod instead of him to start the year. So he probably should have been there all along. Bruce Arians seems to get away with every decision that he makes, it seems like. But what does this say about the fantasy landscape now with David Johnson being rated as highly as that? Is it a sign of maturity, of people getting a little bit smarter and thinking, I don't need to see the super extensive track record like I would have needed to in years past? Or is it a sign of people maybe sometimes projecting a little bit much to just look at the short body of work and extrapolate it over 16 games the next year?
Yeah, I think it's more of that. I think people are getting excited about what possibly David Johnson can be, and it certainly is exciting, and was a great run he had in the second half of the year. for sure. I mean, he was just an absolute monster down the stretch for the Cardinals. It's a great situation to be in, a great offense. I think he's a really good pass catcher. So in PPR formats, I definitely am in support of him as a, you know, probably a top three running back. I think it's a bold move, certainly, to take him, you know, first overall, really within those first few picks. I think you're certainly – there's a decent amount of risk there. And I'm not totally convinced that Chris Johnson is completely out of the picture. He actually ran pretty well when he was healthy last year. And when he was the lead guy, he was doing all right. So I'm not saying that he's going to totally cut in, but I certainly think he'll still be there, and they're going to keep David Johnson fresh, which means I don't think he's necessarily going to be the biggest workhorse that maybe everyone's projecting him to be. So I'm still a little leery. I like the talent, but I definitely think there's a lot of projection in his game right now.
What do you think about that, Michael? Because there's guys every year that you look at them and you wonder what a certain player says about the sort of macro landscape, and then he's that guy that sort of jumps out for me. People's willingness to entertain such a high pick on him. I'm just curious what you think that says about the mindset of the average fantasy football player these days, that if they're going a little bit too far in on projection, or they're willing to entertain the upside and maybe being a little bit more discerning despite not having a long track record.
I think there's some of that gambling effect to it of, and not to get down all, that whole rabbit hole, but the idea of you've seen a little bit, you've got enough that piqued your interest. I mean, you look at the long gains, even going all the way back to opening week, right? One catch, 55 yards and a touchdown. You go through the game log, numerous 20-yard, you know, runs after catch, and then once he was a starter and actually touching the ball out of the backfield as a rusher down the stretch, you know, gains of 23, 47, going on like that. So you see enough to where you're pushing forward, and I think the reinforcement of the narrative that it's a not for long league where you guys that have been running in this league for multiple years, you're waiting for the breakdown. Because as you're looking at the running back position, we already talked about Jamaal Charles. We assume that we're not hitting the wall with Adrian Peterson just yet. Does the year that he missed help him extend that shelf life? I don't know, but he's certainly on the wrong side given historical numbers in terms of age. And so when you start looking at all the different options at the back position, Todd Gurley, he's exciting. You saw a lot of good things. You also saw him hit a huge wall and saw some really subpar games. And right now, are you trusting that passing attack to really give him any help? So while we think he's going to get 25 touches, what does that mean? What does that mean? Is he falling forward for 3 yards? He's about 6 feet tall, right? So that means that math makes sense. So you start looking at the idea of, you know, what am I getting out of him? Right? He takes one step and falls forward. There's your 3 yards. So you're fearful that he's either going to break down, or the fact that they're going to stink, or at least they look like they're going to stink, even though Jeff Fisher was protesting that he's not going blankety-blank in 7-9 again. If he gets to 7-9 right now with this squad, I'm feeling pretty good for him. He's had a good run. But I think when you start factoring in things like that, age of running backs and other situations, at least in Arizona, unless Carson Palmer goes down, you got to feel pretty good about it. I mean, how many debates have you had with your friends? I mean, I did a fantasy, you know, convention thing down in San Diego, and we at the end of a roundtable, we had a bunch of drafts going on. I had four different people come up from different drafts asking me independently, no group thought at all, how I would rank the Arizona wide receivers. And that's been one of the great debates of this draft season, because you're thinking about it as a whole, and when David Johnson's name gets in there, 36 catches a year ago, with many people thinking, what, 60, 65 is the ceiling, maybe a little higher with a lot of yak if Palmer's upright. Now, if they go back to quarterback hell like they were a couple years ago when he got hurt, all bets are off. But as it stands, since we're not predicting full-on blown-out legs, you're looking at a guy that has tremendous upside, and I think people will take that when you start parsing out the arguments of where's my ceiling, especially when we're talking about some of the high stakes, bragging rights, and ability to humiliate your friends and family.
Absolutely, and very interesting ad hoc focus group there in terms of getting that question put to you about the Arizona wide receivers, and I can understand that question coming up because it is kind of an unsettled order there. And as far as it goes with Adrian Peterson, yeah, we are sort of in uncharted territory. we won't know until a couple of years from now how much longer, if any, that year out extended him. To whatever extent, I hope that remains uncharted territory as far as a player getting a year off for horsewhipping his kid's nards. I hope we never see that again. But it will be interesting to see the effect on his career, certainly when it's all said and done. But, again, a wonderful roundtable with you guys, as I knew it would be today. Bobby McMahon from Roto Experts, first time on the program with us. Pleasure to have you on. You really brought it strong, Bobby. Thank you so much for being on, and don't be a stranger.
Yeah, gentlemen, this was a pleasure. I had a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
A lot of fun indeed. That was great. And the great Michael Harmon from Fox Sports Radio. By the way, Michael, I want to put that in that along with your fellow luminaries on mini episode 751 when we're doing our next best of show, you are represented side by side with such greats as Matthew Modine, Carmine Appice, et cetera. So you are in where you belong amidst the luminaries of the world. Thank you again for being on with us today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You know how to find me. Bobby, pleasure to make your acquaintance. Hope we get to wax poetic about football again in the near future, buddy. Have a great year.
Sounds good.
Thank you both very much. Yeah, I'd love to put this panel back again sometime. Maybe take a look back at the season or wherever whatever the case may be. Love to do it again with you guys. Really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 749.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.